From Santa Barbara, California, Timeless Voyager Radio with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers in the fields of environmental issues, alternative healthcare, new psychology, psychic phenomena, UFOs, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and my guest today is internationally renowned author and speaker Dale Pond. He is definitely a Renaissance man with a diversified background in chemistry, physics, mechanical engineering, computer science, mathematics, acoustics. Dale Pond is on the leading edge of new paradigm thinking. He has been able to show that vibration is the principle that underlies all things. He says that there is a link between spirit and matter, the magic key, he says, for creating new worlds and universes. Welcome to Timeless Voyager Radio. What is Delta Spectrum Research?
It's a small organization of diverse people with diverse talents and backgrounds exploring this new science of sympathetic vibratory physics. And we publish what we find.
Now let's talk about the book that we're going to probably talk most about today, although you'll correct me later if that's what needs to be done. I have in front of me this book called Universal Laws Never Before Revealed, Keeley's Secrets. We're going to talk mostly, I believe, today about John Keeley. Is that correct?
That's right.
Why don't you tell our listeners who John Worrell Keeley was and what happened basically in his life, and then we'll talk a little bit about his discoveries.
John Keeley was a scientist in the late 1800s, born 1827, died 1898, and he developed and explored an entire field of physics based on acoustics or sound vibrations. He developed hundreds and hundreds of machines, astounded all the scientists and physicists and engineers at that time, because he had pushed the envelope far beyond even what we have today. And because of that major leap forward, very few of the people, in fact, hardly any of the people at that time understood what he was doing. He did things like acoustic levitation, which NASA is now doing. He worked with ultrasonics, which wasn't accepted until 60 years later. And he worked in quantum physics before quantum physics was even dreamed of.
Now, he was born in 1827. He died in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, in 1898. He developed an entire field of science known as, and this is where I'm wondering, is this what it's called? Is this sympathetic vibration physics?
Right.
All right. What exactly is sympathetic vibration physics?
It's a combination of concepts that are represented in the physics of vibration, not just the vibrations themselves, but the actual physics of the vibrations, coupled primarily with a more or less well-known characteristic called sympathetic vibration, which is a vibration that is tuned to two or more different objects. So if one is modulated or one is affected, the other objects that are sympathetic to the first one react. So they're intimately connected with that sympathetic vibration. Another way of classifying sympathy is love, or as one. So what one is, the other is also, vibrationally speaking.
Now, this concept is something that is certainly, is this foreign to most of our physicists at this point?
Not. It is and it isn't. The principles are known in various and different fields. If we get into a narrow field, we won't see all these connections. But sympathetic vibration is a well-known phenomenon. Vibration, of course, is well-known. The physics of vibration is well-known in many different fields, most notably music and sound and noise control. However, very little effort has been done to bring these together and apply them to molecular or quantum physics, which is what Keeley did, and that's what we're doing now.
All right. Now we talked about, when we talk about John Worrell Keeley, we need to talk about something that's very important, and that is that the government, the U.S. government, this is my understanding, actually confiscated his patents, his papers, and his machines, and they are actually being held in an underground facility, Y-12, near Knoxville, Tennessee. Is that correct?
That's what we understand.
Now, he was actually erased from history, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was erased from the books. You would spend days trying to find him and still not find anything.
Now, what would you say is the overall reason why this happened to him?
There's probably a number of reasons. If we go back and look at the technology he was actually working with and demonstrating to scientists and engineers at the time, there are conceivably many reasons and many different groups who would want to see everything he did get buried and erased from history.
Now, he was in the middle of the Industrial Revolution, which was very fossil fuel-oriented, wasn't it?
Right. He was a peer to Tesla and Edison, those kind of guys. So he knew what was going on. The beginning around 1880s, late 1880s, 1890s, began the effort to monopolize the entire power industry, which has since been thoroughly documented. And there's one group right there who wouldn't want to see done what he was doing.
So we're looking at what you might call a conspiracy to literally stop anything that went against the principles of fossil fuels, coal, oil, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's more like anything goes against creating a monopoly.
Okay, so let's just talk for a moment about maybe a few of the machines that he invented and perhaps a little bit of understanding of how they worked.
All right. One of the famous stories was he made a device that could disintegrate crystalline structures like granite. And he demonstrated this to a group of industrialists in New York. He actually, according to the story, created a tunnel 20 feet deep in the side of solid rock in like 20 minutes with no residue and no explosives. They tied that demonstration to the economic crash of 1893 when there was a huge rush for the gold mines across the country because of this demonstration. Well, it never went anywhere because they never intended it for it to go anywhere.
All right, now, I've lost track of what you just said, and I'm not following that exactly. Say it once more. How was this tied to the gold rush?
The people who paid for the demonstration were gold miners.
Okay, so they knew that if they were to use this technology, they could get deeply into rock that normally would either not be accessible or take months to get through.
Yeah, the cost of mining would go to almost zero of extracting minerals because this device pulverized or disassociated crystalline structures, but it did nothing to metallic structures, so the metal was laying there like in a very fine dust. So the refining processes and all the expenses of moving ores and things would all disappear.
Now I'm sure that people would have referred to this as some kind of charlatan activity, right?
Well, they can refer to anything they want, any way they want.
No, I mean at that point, though. Because, I mean, obviously, if people were to buy into what happened, now this was only done once, or was this repeated?
As far as we know, just that one time to that group. Now, here's the problem. All this stuff about Keeley was disappeared. I spent years finding bits and pieces and scraps of magazine articles. So we don't know all that took place. We only have just vague ideas of what happened.
This is probably not the only information available, but you've done all of this work yourself?
Yes, primarily.
Dale, what moved you to do this?
I don't know. It must be the reason I'm down here. Because it sure rings a bell.
All right. Let's talk about acoustic levitation. So the first one, of course, was the ability to then literally dissociate solid rock. That's the word that's used. And or we might call it just somehow drilling through rock without having any residue.
Well, disassociation is a proper chemical phenomena. It disassociates molecules.
So essentially, when you point this thing, is this kind of like that gadget that Nikola Tesla made called the... that death ray that he created?
Well, there's similar in function and whatnot, but their purposes were entirely different. Actually, when you get into those kinds of ideas, you know, the death rays and all that kind of stuff, it's a good thing Keeley got buried, because this stuff would have been used in both world wars if it had gotten out.
Right. So you feel that people were just not ready for John Keeley at that point?
No, they weren't.
Are we ready for him now?
Are you kidding?
All right, so let's talk about some of the other possibilities then. Now, the acoustic levitation, explain that to the listeners. And me too. I don't want to sound like I know what it is.
Oh, right. There are many, many stories of Keeley's ability to levitate heavy machines, and he would, like 700 or 800 pound machines, he would throw a wire around the machine, which was, the wire was attached to a mechanism on his belt, and he would do some adjusting to it, and he could pick this machine up with basically a finger and move it across his shop. Later, he demonstrated a flying craft that he built to the U.S. Navy, and supposedly they said they couldn't see any use for it. Now, this was in the early 1880s, you know, 20 years before the Wright brothers did anything. And these were operated on principles of acoustic levitation, which is the actual manipulation of gravity, which is not the same thing that NASA has been doing for the past 15 years in their research with acoustic levitation.
Let's just, for the sake of the interview, go over how actually antiquated the concept of flying is in this day and age of technology. I mean, an airfoil is actually ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's 100-year-old technology.
For our listeners, the point here is that everything that flies so far, or at least what we're aware of, you'd take a wing, almost like a kite, you put a big rocket at the end of it and throw it through the air as fast as possible, and that's what keeps it up.
Yeah.
These other principles, like the way we would suppose UFOs fly, would be probably along with the lines of levitation, correct?
That's correct. The idea behind Keeley's original levitation works something like this. We know today, through acoustic research and whatnot, that certain forms of acoustic vibration or sound will cause things to be attracted together, depending on the frequencies and the degree of sympathetic vibration between the two objects. You've got different degrees of attractiveness. Sometimes they'll attract very strongly, or they'll shatter the experimental equipment doing it. What Keeley apparently discovered was that fact over 100 years ago, and he learned through the physics of it to create and adjust those forms of attractiveness. There was a strong vibration field that he used to call negative attraction, which meant that it attracted things together very strongly. So it's quite obvious, that being the case, that the Earth vibrates, everything on it vibrates, and there's degrees of sympathetic attraction between the molecules and the Earth.
Now, well, you know, it's hard to cover this in a one-hour show, but
right. Boy,
I'll tell you, this certainly opens up the mind. Motor power from sound. He developed some very interesting motors that I guess we still... do we have any working models of these at all?
Not yet, or not that we know about. the ones... Keeley did three primary different types of motors. The first one, which is the one he was most famous for, operated on a form of water hammer or cavitation, which is sometimes called today implosion, where you take... water vapor and you actually implode it instead of exploding it. And he demonstrated this before many, many thousands of people. He gave up on that particular track of investigation and went into something, this thing called negative attraction, where he developed a form of artificial magnetism, if you will, between metals, very exotic alloys that he'd create, which we don't have the formulas for. And by varying the degrees of attraction between the metals, he would pull this thing around. You know, just imagine if you could turn a magnet on and off, you would have motors kind of like what we got going on today. And the third type was based on quantum acoustics. And again, this is over 100 years ago, you got to remember this, where certain alloys of metals were caused to sublimate, and those sublimated quantum gases, if you will, were used as working fluids. Quite complicated, and there's a lot of research going on right now and with my group to replicate one of these things.
Let's talk a little bit about the possibility then that this really does is really being held in a highly secured underground facility. Why is it there, and what do you suppose is being done if it is there?
Well, it's an interesting question. We know that this facility exists. We know engineers who used to work near it, not in it, but near it. Apparently anybody working near it can't talk about it. We were told through various sources that not only was Keeley's machinery and patents held down there, but Wilhelm Reich's, Royal Rife's machinery and designs, a lot of Tesla stuff down there. And it's a research facility to try and develop anything they can, mostly weaponry, with this stuff.
So they use the back engineering techniques?
Yeah, reverse engineering. I don't think they're going to get anywhere with the Keeley stuff, but they may get somewhere with some of the other stuff.
Now, you actually, at this point, talk about Keeley almost as though, I guess in your opinion, he was far more developed than Tesla.
Yes, we believe that for sure. Some of the concepts that we're uncovering now far exceed anything any of us have ever read by anybody, and whether it's Tesla or whoever. It was just an astounding rediscovery of ancient science.
Tell me something. This is my impression. Was John Keeley working with room temperature superconductivity?
As near as we can determine, he made a special wire he called a Trexar. There were several variations of this wire, and they had different variations in alloy. And the purpose was, you got to remember, in the 1870s, 1880s, there were no audio generators or sound generators or anything. He had to make everything. And he would make his sound or acoustic generators, purely mechanical machines, by the way, and in order to conduct those vibrations to an experiment, he needed a wire that would convey those vibrations identically to the way he created them. So he made these machines, and apparently they were perfection in themselves, kind of like the best, finest Swiss watch movements. So he made these wires. It took him 8 years to make one wire, that it would conduct perfect vibrations from the generator to whatever the experiment was that he was doing. Quite extraordinary.
All right, so I guess the point that I'm getting here is that Keeley not only was far, far ahead of science and physics at that time, but he's far, far ahead of science and physics as we sit here today and speak about it.
Right. Well, there's a neat little thing here, that when you begin to look at the physics of the metals and of the dynamics and of the forces involved from a perspective of vibration, it all starts getting very simple. If we take everything like the hard particles and we need zillions of kilowatts or gigawatts of energy to do this, that, or the other thing, we start winding down into chaos where we can't really get anything done. But if we start looking at the vibrations and work with the vibrations, then it gets real simple, or a whole lot simpler.
All right, let me frame this thing the way I understand it. Now, we all know, for example, that anything that is solid, anything that is here in appearances, the world of appearances, is made up of molecules which are nothing more than atoms surrounded by electrons. The distances between them are as far as the distance between here and the moon in some cases. Is that correct?
Yeah, or further.
Or
in
further.
In the conventional paradigm. Keeley had a different way of looking at atoms and molecules, but to put it in a nutshell, molecules are made of atoms. Atoms are made of leptons, electrons, protons, whatnot. Those are made of photons.
Wait. Leptons?
Yeah, that's a general classification of electrons, neutrons, protons.
Oh, okay.
That class of particle.
Okay.
Those particles are made of photons. This is standard quantum physics. Now, but it was also Keeley's paradigm over 100 years ago. So the photons today are considered to be made of quarks. And Richard Feynman, who got two Nobel Prizes recently, just before he died a couple years ago, on quantum electrodynamics, evidenced a theory that he thought these particles were composed of three particles each, a positive, negative, neutral particle. Well, that's identical to what Keeley said 120 years ago.
What are you doing at this point, then? What is the work that you and your cohorts are working on right now with Keeley's information?
We are reproducing, well, we're doing a number of things. One is we're learning all we can about what he did, and we're writing about it and teaching about it, lecturing about it. I just got back from 2 weeks in England where we gave 7 presentations on this SVP material. In the meantime, we are trying to reproduce one of Keeley's original musical dynaspheres, which operates on sound, and to understand all the physics, the exotic physics involved in this device. And as we uncover the knowledge and the parts and pieces, whatnot, we're putting it up on our webpage so that it doesn't get buried again. So that's what we're doing.
All right. Now, what do you expect to have happen if you can follow through?
This knowledge base that's being developed through this project is far beyond the conventional paradigms, and it stretches any number of fields. You pick a field, we're doing stuff in it that really isn't done normally. And we want to bring this ability, this technology ability, to the planet. The applications will be astounding in many, many different fields. But we don't want to capsulate it in one place, because that's just not the way things would tend to work very well.
We've been talking about John Keeley, free energy, sympathetic vibration physics, and the real nature of the universe. Dale, what we need to do is talk about something here that I think that's very important, and that is this. The first main aspect of sympathetic vibration physics is the physical structures of machines and instruments, primarily because we live in a physical universe. Now, an understanding of the inner nature and essence of the physics is essential to understand why we want to harmoniously develop tools for tomorrow's world. What exactly are we talking about here?
When we can do things such as disassociate crystalline structures, or we can do a levitation, and what some of that implies that we can do, and some of the other things that we can do, there needs to be safeguards on it, because there's a lot of crazy people out there who would take this technology and go attack their neighboring nation or their own nation. It's happening all over the world, and there wouldn't be anything left. Part of the machinery or the instrumentation that we're developing is, of course, it's being built using sympathetic vibration. Because of the multidimensional structure of the paradigm that we're using, it involves, you might say, the vibrations of the people who build it and the people who operate them. So unless these machines are built with all this stuff kept in mind and operated using sympathetic vibration, which is to say love or harmony, they're not going to operate. They will not be able to be operated by people with bad intent. This just won't happen.
So basically what we're talking about is a fail-safe mechanism.
Right.
Given to us hopefully by nature or the universe in the first place.
It's already there.
Namely that a person who isn't in harmony with the machine that they develop using these particular physical structures can't operate it for, let's say, negative purposes. Is that correct, or can it be?
Won't be able to operate it at all. Now, there are certain machines that we should be able to develop, like generators and pumps and things of that nature, that pretty near anybody can run because their utility is innocuous. But some of this other stuff where we're dealing with the really high-level physics involved, they're just not going to use them. And if you look through the paradigm of society that's going on today, you'll see there's a major, major shift going on from this sledgehammer, evil, vile, vicious nature that we've had for centuries, and we're moving into a more harmonious paradigm. And this technology is part of the beginning moving in that direction.
The second most important aspect of this is the acknowledgement and the incorporation of so-called spiritual side of nature. What does that include?
If we take Keeley's original paradigm as we've been able to piece it together, we can see that molecules are made of atoms, atoms are made of electrons, electrons are made of photons, photons are made of quarks, and quarks are made of something else. You start getting smaller than the quarks, And we're finding realms that are sympathetic to mind, will, intent, emotions. So by acknowledging that this is the physics, this is the way it works in a vibratory dynamic, then, of course, the mind is there in the machine. It's like bending spoons. I know a lot of people don't believe in bending spoons, but we bend spoons. It's part of a demonstration of mind in matter, not mind over matter.
And that's very important, because I've understood many times when I've been to those types of demonstrations that the issue is that you are cooperating with nature, you are co-creating, you are not demanding that something be done.
Right. No sledgehammer approach is allowed anymore. And that's what we're doing with this technology.
So you are, in a sense, working along the side of and co-creating with the universe when you work with this type of physics.
And it's the only way that this physics will be developed. It can't be stolen. It can't be ripped off. It can't be forced. You can't just dig metal out of the ground and bang it into shape and expect it to do anything.
Now, physicists then need to change their view of the universe in order to even work in this realm.
Right. There's a fundamental shift that needs to be taking place in the standard atheistic, humanistic type sciences. There's more out there than these people will ever admit to. And they don't have to admit to anything. You know, everybody's got a choice about their own life. But if you want to do this kind of work, this is the only way it's going to get done.
Now, with this material laying, let's say, supposedly in Knoxville, Tennessee, or somewhere near there at underground vaults, this is why you are saying or suggesting that of the different types of machines, papers, and patents that are down there, this information from John Keeley is highly unlikely to be deciphered by anyone who tries to do it from, let's say, you said, an atheistic approach. Maybe not so much atheistic, but certainly without the understanding of how the universe operates.
Well, also, you know, it's saying the same thing over and over and over again. That whole operation down there was constructed, it was envisioned, constructed, and it's operated on fear. That's the whole reason it's sitting there.
Right.
And fear is a negative vibration. It's not going to work. So, yeah, they could take the machines apart, and they could analyze them, and they could subject them to everything they want to, but unless they got a loving heart, the machines will not cooperate.
Now, do you have evidence of what you're saying? I mean, do we have any physical evidence at all of what you have just said so far this afternoon, this morning, this evening, depending on what time people are listening to the show?
Which part?
Is there real physical evidence? In other words, do you have some of these machines actually working?
No. We know of two machines that are still that still can be found that Keeley made out of the hundreds. One belongs to a person in the Midwest, and the other has been cannibalized for parts, and it's in a museum in Vermont. And those are the only two machines we know of that we can get near. Now, we know why 12 exists. We were told through psychic channels that all this stuff is in Y-12. We were told by engineers who work near there that the place exists and that it's guarded with rocket launches. It's extremely heavily guarded.
Now, you're using a lot of psychic information at this point, a lot of channeling. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's where most of this information is now coming, to find out where and how to put these things together. Are people channeling Keeley at this point or others?
We are in contact with pretty near anybody that we need to be in contact with to bring this to fruition.
Now, I know that a lot of people use Edgar Cayce's information, as a matter of fact, not just from his books, but he seems to be an active disincarnate spirit personality at this point also.
Right. Yes, we've had him come through. We've had Edison, you name it. We've had him come through, Tesla.
Now, of course,
mostly Keeley.
Now, in the scientific community, I'm sure they poo-poo all this stuff, and immediately you've lost all of your credibility when you start talking like this, right? Well, some of your credibility.
I don't particularly mind.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that it isn't true. I'm saying that that's how the scientific community operates at this point, isn't it?
Well, anything more powerful than them, they'll discredit.
Okay, but we could call this subjective knowledge, or somehow you are spending time now with the other realms, and let's face it, I mean, my goodness, with all of the work that's been done over the thousands and thousands and thousands of years, that there has been machines and energy from different planetary systems, different dimensionalities, it would be absurd then for inventors to spend their time reinventing the wheel. Why not just get the information since it's already there?
Right, right. And this is part of the project that we're, part of the purpose of the project that we're working on, is to show and demonstrate that we should be working cooperatively with these other realms that exist. We know they exist. Anybody with an open mind and a little bit of honesty looking at the Casey readings has to admit that there's something there. They can't just throw it away. So we're using, you know, we're using those sources to develop parts and aspects of this project as proof, as part of the purpose of the project, that it is a valid thing to do.
Let's look at, now I have the book in front of me. I had to bend down and get the book. Mm-hmm. I have these incredible pictures here of things. Here's a picture on page 120. It's called the rotating resonator. What did the rotating resonator do? I'll just ask for simple things every once in a while. This is probably not simple, but
okay,
it's an interesting-looking picture anyway.
Right, right. The sphere on the right is the musical dynasphere, a variation of it. He made many, many variations of all these machines.
Now, music was very important in Keeley's work.
Right. Music is organized vibration.
All right.
It's got the mathematics, it's got the physics, it's got history. And music, according to Casey, is the only thing that connects the physical material realm to the spirit realm, or the divine, realm of the divine. And believe me, it does. So the music sphere on the right is what causes the rotation using vibration and the sublimated quantum gases I was talking about. The large drum-like apparatus on the left, we're only assuming that it's a dynamo, like for measuring horsepower, things like that. We don't really know.
So what is the assumption here, that this thing is being run by sound?
Yes.
So this thing would be like, instead of creating electricity, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong, instead of creating electricity by making a big dam and having water turn a water wheel, essentially, that's how we make electricity, right? You're saying that it could be created this way?
We could create it this way, sure.
And the only thing that makes it run is sound.
It's not that simple, but sound is one of the active principles involved. It uses lots of energy, but it doesn't use fuel as we conventionally speak of it. We know, standard physics knows, that there's unlimited energy in atomic forces. So that's the energy we're tapping into in a harmonic way, so that there's no discordant, aberrant particles like radioactivity. So that none of that stuff shows up in any of the stuff.
Now, of course, Keeley was not just known for his machines. I mean, you talked a moment ago about his levitation. The levitation, I'm sure, must be one of the most incredible ideas that I guess anyone has ever imagined. I mean, we always talk about levitation. It's the most important thing in everyone's mind when we talk about any kind of space travel. And you're saying that as of the middle 1800s, here was a working levitation system.
That's what we're led to believe.
And you've done enough, or you feel that you and your research organization has done enough research to believe that these are not just wives' tales. And I don't mean to sound like a chauvinist. I don't know how else to put that.
No.
False stories. I'll say false stories.
False
that way
stories,
I'm out of it.
False
okay.
stories, right.
All right.
Keeley was probably the biggest thing to hit Philadelphia since the Revolution. And he had the greatest scientists, the greatest engineers, the greatest finance people on the planet coming into his shop, their company, they're called the Keeley Motor Company. And they analyzed, they took his machines apart, they watched him work, they did everything. And none of them could come up with any idea how he worked except one professor that we've been able to track down, Professor Daniel Brinton. The University of, I believe, Pennsylvania, or Philadelphia, whichever. And he understood Keeley quite a bit, and he wrote a lot about it. All of his books have disappeared except one paper, which we found. Hmm. So he did, you know, if the guy was bogus, why'd they go out and spend buku dollars scrounging up every reference scrap of paper to Keeley there ever was and get rid of it?
So our assumption is a pretty clear assumption, okay? We can assume that all of this stuff not only worked, but certainly presented some kind of a danger or something to a large group of people because it has been hidden for a long time.
Yes, that's the assumption.
All right, now this is starting to emerge, and with a radio program like Timeless Voyager Radio, it's really going to emerge now. What is your hope? What would you like to have happen after a program like today's program? All right, but how about, do you want to get, are you looking for people who are seriously involved in funding, let's say venture capital funding for the continuing work, perhaps build some of these actual machines?
Well, not exactly.
Okay. Tell me what you want.
Okay. We're in a position right now that we're doing fundamental basic research. We don't have a plan that says that we can say, well, we're going to get so much return from it in so many days' work or so many dollars invested. We're doing the basic research right now. We are looking for donations with no strings attached, so that when we do complete this project, that we can go public and there's nothing stopping it. At that point, when we have the physics firmly nailed down and we can engineer it, which we're developing right now, all these procedures, then the new applications from this basic technology can be manipulated around to where we can take investors in, but not on this initial base.
Now, how secure would the patents be at this point, since the stuff's already been patented and hidden? Can you actually re-patent these things?
Who knows? You know, who knows? But we can patent applications of the technology. You know, we come up with a new patent, and you search a patent database, and there's nothing in there like it. Well, you get a patent, if that's what you want to do.
Because normally, all you do is follow the money trail back, and that usually brings you to where the stuff is. So, I mean, if somebody started making money, I suppose, on one of Keeley's principles, that would open up the fact that this stuff exists somewhere.
Well, yeah, if they wanted to put it on the market.
Well, I'm sure that somebody, if they see that it will work, will start opening up. I mean, who knows? This stuff may be literally sitting in secured, safe deposit boxes because no one knows it can do anything.
Right, right. There's, you know, people get stuff in their attics and basements and whatnot, and there's photographs. We've only uncovered 18 photographs of John Keeley and his work. He must have had thousands of photographs taken of his machines. Where are they?
So mostly, more importantly, at this junction point, the most important thing that you would like to be able to do is to at least get the research together.
All right. We need to complete this project. And there's no time limit on it. There's no money limit on it. We've got a bunch of people out there working on it, most of them without pay.
All right. You're listening to Timeless Voyager Radio. My name is Bruce Stephen Holmes. We are talking about probably the most incredible universal laws that I've ever heard of, applied to machinery that I never heard of. Understanding and Using the Science of Sympathetic Vibration. The book, Universal Laws, Never Before Revealed. I know that a lot of physicists would love to have this book because it's well put together. It doesn't seem to be, well, I don't know. It's got lots of numbers in it. Numbers and pictures. You know, I talk from the viewpoint of a musician, so what do I know? I look at it and it looks pretty good to me. I don't even pretend to understand this stuff.
It's based on a concept of love. That's what sympathetic vibration is. And then you couch all the other stuff in musical terms. Everything relates to everything else vibrationally, which is to say, musically. And it gets simpler and simpler. It's a different way of looking at it. We were taught to look at it in a way that makes it hard and difficult and complicated. But this goes the other way. It gets a lot more simple.
All right, so the book is authored by you, Dale Pond. John Keeley has articles in it. Nikola Tesla has articles. Edgar Cayce and seven others. All right. How would you like to finish up the interview? What would you like to talk about? We have here the principles of spiritual science. All right. So anyway, you've been presenting these workshops and seminars all over the world on the energy that can be created from this particular machinery. Your hopes are that you can finish this research. It looks pretty incredible to me. I am very impressed with this. We actually have a little project together we're working on, common law. Why don't we just talk real fast about what common law is and why it's so important to this kind of information that we gave out today?
Sure. The, you know, we can't have free energy and use it unless we have a free society. The common law is an ancient law developed over centuries, and that law is the law that established this country. It was originally established on a common law, which is embodied in a constitution. That law is the law that the people used to maintain control over their lives and their government. The law that we've got going on nowadays, where people can murder people in Waco and get away with it, that's not common law. That's called equity law. And it's so unless we can bring back the common law in our society, in our lives, then free energy is never going to come back.
All right. Dale Pond, thank you so much for being with us today on Timeless Voyager Radio.
All right. Thank you.
And for the rest of you, thank you so much for listening. I hope you tell your friends about the show. Please, everyone, have a very, very good week. Enjoy yourselves.